Picture this. You are seeing Toby, a 14-year-old boy, in the pediatric clinic, accompanied by his father, Jamal. Toby is doing well in school, both academically and socially, has met all developmental milestones, and has no physical complaints. His father anxiously says, "He eats too fast. I keep telling him not to wolf down his food. I tell him that his body can't digest all that food all at once." Toby's physical exam is unremarkable. His body mass index, or BMI, is right in the middle of the normal range at 22.5. You pause, thinking of how to answer Jamal's concerns about Toby's rapid eating. And how to explain the ability of the gastrointestinal secretory system to handle a voracious 14-year-old appetite. Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing gastroenterology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Identify the location, cell type, release stimulus, and function of the major gastrointestinal hormones, secretin, cholecystokinin, gastrin, and vasoactive intestinal polypeptide. 2. Describe the release stimulus and function of the GI regulatory peptides bombesin, GLP-1, GLP-2, ghrelin, leptin, motilin, somatostatin, and gastric inhibitory polypeptide GIP. 3. Understand how the physical and chemical compositions of luminal contents are sensed and the resulting hormonal responses. And 4. Outline how GI cells integrate multiple hormonal and neural regulatory inputs to control digestive function. Part 1. What is gastrointestinal regulation? In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, Alice follows a rabbit down a hole and winds up in a hallway lined with locked doors of various sizes. She gets caught in a comical loop of cause and effect brought on by substances she consumes. When she obeys a bottle label that says, "Drink me," she shrinks to a size small enough to pass through a tiny door and enter the inviting garden on the other side. She shrinks so much, however, that she can no longer reach the key that would unlock the door. She obeys the "Eat Me" label on a nearby cake and regains her former size and then some. She becomes a giant. The way these opposing substances exert their effects on Alice is similar to how our GI system works, with hormones exerting sometimes opposite effects on digestion. Let's go down the rabbit hole that is the GI tract and explore its regulation. As we eat, our GI system releases a host of both local and distant regulators to control the process of digestion. We will begin with the primary hormones, then secondary hormones, and lastly, discuss how our body senses its intraluminal contents and integrates the various stimuli that it receives. Part 2. What are the primary hormonal players? There are 4 primary hormones in the GI system: secretin, cholecystokinin, or CCK, gastrin, and vasoactive intestinal polypeptide, or VIP. Each one is located within a unique endocrine cell type at a specific location in the GI tract and is released in response to a particular stimulus to exert its function. I'm going to start with the hormone gastrin. When you swallow food into the stomach gets distended as it fills with short protein peptides in the lumen. Both of these trigger gastrin release from G cells located in the antrum of the stomach, which is the part that looks like a butt if the stomach is a seated person. Eating also triggers the vagus nerve to directly secrete gastrin-releasing peptide, GRP, which is another stimulus for the G cells to secrete gastrin. Gastrin's major function is to increase acid, or hydrogen ion, secretion from parietal cells in the body of the stomach. Gastrin also maintains mucosal growth and promotes gastric motility. Gastrin effectively steps on the gas to promote GI motility. Next, we've got secretin. That decrease in gastric pH from the hydrogen ions, thank you gastrin, induces S cells down in the duodenal epithelium to release secretin into the bloodstream. Now, secretin then binds to pancreatic receptors, causing an exocrine release of bicarbonate and an endocrine release of somatostatin, both from pancreatic cells. Somatostatin then tries to counteract gastrin by lowering gastric acid secretion from the stomach parietal cells. Together, these events buffer against the acidic chyme, another word for schmaltz, entering the duodenum. An additional function of secretin is to increase bile secretion through local stimulus of cholecystokinin, known as CCK. So let's move on to CCK. CCK is released from eye cells in the duodenum in response to the stimulus of fatty acids and amino acids as they enter from the stomach. When a large food bolus enters the duodenum, that also activates CCK-releasing peptide. And you guessed it, CCK-releasing peptide binds to its receptor on the eye cells, causing CCK release into the bloodstream. CCK itself binds to CCK1 receptors in the pancreas. So what does CCK actually do? Well, its functions include increasing pancreatic exocrine secretion of digestive enzymes and bicarbonate, promoting gallbladder contraction and bile secretion, relaxing the sphincter of Oddi, and slowing gastric motility. CCK slows motility by inhibiting vagus nerve fibers, which normally stimulate peristalsis. Inhibiting peristalsis causes relaxation of the fundus smooth muscle cells to slow emptying of the stomach. Another important yet underappreciated function of CCK is the negative feedback that it provides to the brain as a signal to stop eating. In effect, it is a satiety hormone. However, CCK is just one of the many players responsible for regulating our eating behavior. Finally, let's discuss the last major hormone, vasoactive intestinal peptide, or VIP. VIP is stimulated by intestinal wall distension from food and parasympathetic vagus nerve stimulation. Inhibition of VIP secretion is caused by catecholamines like epinephrine, also known as adrenaline. Parasympathetic ganglia located within the enteric nervous system, or ENS, the brain of the gut, release VIP. VIP relaxes intestinal smooth muscle and the sphincters, including the esophageal, pyloric, gallbladder sphincters, and the sphincter of Oddi. This relaxation of the intestinal smooth muscles promotes absorption. In addition, VIP also stimulates the secretion of water and electrolytes into the intestinal lumen. This increase in fluid and electrolytes is coupled with the ENS reflex arc to help regulate motility and secretion throughout the GI tract. Let's stop here for a quick review question. Question: which hormone released by the small intestine lowers gastric acid secretion by stimulating production of somatostatin? Answer is, secretin stimulates the production of somatostatin to lower gastric acid secretion. Part 3. What are the secondary hormonal players? In addition to the four major hormones that regulate digestion, there are also some minor hormones involved. These include bombesin, glucagon-like peptides 1 and 2, or GLP-1 and 2, ghrelin, leptin, motilin, somatostatin, and gastric inhibitory polypeptide GIP. For each one, try to remember the stimulus, the mechanism of release, and the function. Let's start with bombesin, a neuropeptide with multiple functions. It is stimulated by activity of the parasympathetic vagal nerve fibers, which is also where it happens to be released from. Bombesin acts as a paracrine hormone on nearby G cells to release gastrin. Hence, bombesin is also known as gastrin-releasing peptide, or GRP. However, it's also an important neuromodulator alongside CCK for providing negative feedback in the brain to stop eating. Bombesin is like a bomb that disrupts your eating, otherwise known as a satiety hormone. Next, we have glucagon-like peptide 1. GLP-1 is an incretin, which means it enhances and prolongs the effects of insulin. It is released from L cells of the intestine when food is ingested. On the increase of serum glucose with a meal, GLP-1 potentiates pancreatic beta cell production and release of insulin. It also decreases secretion of acid in the stomach. Then there's glucagon-like peptide 2. GLP-2 is secreted from central nervous system neurons and L cells of the intestine alongside GLP-1. GLP-2 has a wide array of functions, the most important of which is promotion of mucosal growth and increasing surface area for absorption. Another important function of GLP-2 is protecting the neurons of the myenteric plexus. Next, we have ghrelin, which is secreted by parietal glands in the fundus of the stomach during times of fasting. Correspondingly, it is a potent hormone that stimulates appetite in the hypothalamus, thereby prompting food intake. I remember its function by saying, "Ghrelin keeps your stomach growling." It also participates in a network of complicated signals that assess our energy stores and then influence food consumption appropriately. This includes monitoring adipose storage. The secretion of ghrelin is normally reduced in overweight patients because of their high energy stores in adipose tissue, which should ordinarily lead to reduced appetite. In a more direct manner, ghrelin also increases gastric emptying, gastric motility, and acid secretion. It decreases insulin secretion and enhances insulin sensitivity. The counterbalance to ghrelin is the hormone leptin. Leptin is synthesized and secreted by adipose tissue. Circulation of leptin throughout the body can be in either a free or a bound form. When bound to leptin-binding protein, leptin becomes more bioavailable, meaning the hormone can have a greater effect. This is partially because leptin-binding protein allows the hormone to cross the blood-brain barrier where leptin exerts most of its actions. The primary role is to decrease food intake by acting as a satiety signal to the brain. The satiety signal occurs in the ventromedial nucleus, but leptin has also been shown to influence the hypothalamic feeding of dorsomedial and lateral nuclei. Leptin inhibits neuronal hormones that strongly stimulate feeding behaviors like neuropeptide Y. Leptin has many other functions, such as modulating the pulsatile release of thyroid-stimulating hormone and gonadal hormones. Decreased sensitivity to leptin has been observed in patients with obesity. This decreased sensitivity is caused in part by less leptin-binding protein in the blood and fewer leptin receptors in the brain. Decreased sensitivity means that it takes more hormone for the brain to get a satiety signal. Most times, the level of hormone is insufficient to produce the satiety signal, so the patient keeps eating and eating. Conversely, increased sensitivity has been observed in underweight people, so much so that ingesting a tiny amount of food floods the brain with leptin, quickly halting hunger. Let's try a quick quiz question to see if you got that. What happens if a person has little to no leptin sensitivity? Low sensitivity to leptin would result in continual eating. This is sometimes observed in people who are obese. Okay, so moving on, let's discuss motilin. The function of motilin is as it sounds. It increases motility. However, perhaps not at the expected time. Motilin stimulates the migrating motor complex, or the MMC, which are long peristaltic waves of contractions along the intestines that occur during fasting states. It causes borborygmic, one of my more favorite medical terms, which are the growling or rumbling sounds made by the stomach as gas moves through the intestines. Fun fact here, in times of food poisoning or hazardous ingestion, like for example a penny, motilin is secreted in high amounts to cause a peristaltic flush of the intestines, and this is to protect the intestines from further damage. Next up, we have somatostatin. Somatostatin is almost like a teacher constantly telling their class to settle down, in the sense that it downregulates most GI functions. The word even sounds like it's telling you to stop or stay static. Somatostatin release is increased by low pH and high pepsinogen concentration in the GI lumen, so basically when chyme is present. Somatostatin is inhibited by vagus nerve stimuli, so that digestion can continue. Somatostatin is released by D cells in the antrum of the stomach and pancreatic islets. In the pancreas, somatostatin inhibits insulin, glucagon, and exocrine secretions. In the small intestine, it decreases intestinal fluid secretion and gallbladder contraction. And lastly, we have gastric inhibitory polypeptide. GIP is considered an incretin alongside GLP-1, hence its second name, glucose-dependent insulinotropic peptide. In response to a bolus of fatty acids, amino acids, or glucose, GIP is released from the K cells in the duodenum and jejunum. GIP lowers acid secretion and increases the release of insulin. GIP and GLP-1 increase the production and release of insulin from beta cells. Quick clinical correlation fun fact here. Intravenous or IV glucose does not stimulate the release of incretins, so the insulin response to a meal is higher than the insulin response to a similar IV glucose load. Now, I know there are a lot of hormones to keep straight, but one way to organize them is by whether their release is stimulated by fasting or eating or food products in the lumen of the GI tract. There are just two of these minor hormones stimulated by fasting, motilin and ghrelin. The others are stimulated by eating or food products entering the lumen, including bombesin, GLP-1, GLP-2, leptin, somatostatin, and GIP. Time for a knowledge check. Question: which two minor hormones are stimulated by the fasting state? Answer is motilin, which keeps the GI tract in motion, and ghrelin, which keeps you growling or hungry. Part 4. When are these hormones released? Now that we have identified the primary and secondary GI regulatory hormones, let's explore what happens when food enters the small intestine and how this initiates the hormonal response. There are two major mechanisms for detecting the presence of food in the lumen and providing a hormonal response: chemical detection and mechanical detection. Chemical detection is accomplished by the villus and crypt architecture of the small intestine and the enteroendocrine cells. The villi are the long, finger-like projections of mucosal surface reaching into the lumen of the intestines. These cells maintain the electrolyte and pH environment. The crypt cells are clustered in the finger pits, if you will, and they release hormones and enzymes. Enteroendocrine cells located at the base of the crypts also secrete a variety of hormones. These are actually modified epithelial cells, and the shape of these cells is similar to a pyramid with a narrow apical side and a wide basal side. This allows large amounts of secretory granules to be released from the basal side after minimal stimulation at the apical end. There are three types of enteroendocrine cells, G, I, and S. And each type has a unique apical G protein-coupled receptor, or GPCR, for sensing various molecules. G cells reside in the stomach and duodenum and are highly sensitized to amino acids, calcium, and acid, or hydrogen ion. Sufficient quantities of any of these three stimuli can activate the GPCR receptor, thereby prompting the release of gastrin from the basal side. I cells reside in the small intestine. With high levels of luminal fatty or amino acids, they are triggered by the binding of CCK-releasing peptide to the GPCR. S cells reside mainly in the duodenum. They also respond to luminal fatty acids, amino acids, and glucose, causing secretion of secretin. Here's a good time to do a quick question. What apical surface component of enteroendocrine cells allows them to easily sense luminal molecules? Enteroendocrine cells have G protein-coupled receptors that sense sugars, proteins, fatty acids, and protons or hydrogen ion. Each type of enteroendocrine cell has a specific receptor type that responds to molecules physiologically relevant to their function. Now, the other mechanism of detection in the GI tract is mechanical detection. In this case, physical distension of the lumen by a food bolus stimulates the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve innervates certain cells, specifically G cells, D cells, and chief cells. These parasympathetic nervous system ganglia, or PNS ganglia, release GRP, bombesin, at G cells, causing gastric secretion. At D cells, the PNS stimulus decreases the secretion of somatostatin, which then leads to increased gastrin release because of less inhibition by somatostatin. This is physiologically appropriate because food entering the stomach requires a corresponding increase in gastrin and subsequently acid secretion for digestion. At chief cells, vagal stimulation prompts pepsin secretion. And lastly, distension of the stomach triggers the release of VIP from the PNS ganglia. This relaxes the pyloric sphincter, allowing food to pass through into the duodenum. Duodenal distension causes further release of VIP to increase fluid and electrolyte secretion. So now, let's follow the path of food through the digestive tract and the complex signaling and secretion happening along the way. Food is initially detected within the stomach by both mechanical and chemical mechanisms. Distension activates the vagus nerve, which begins the stomach's digestive process. Then, as the food is mixed with acid and enzymes in the stomach, the food is broken down into basic components, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. From here, chemical recognition of the elevated levels of basic chemical components enhances the stomach's digestive process. During digestion, elevating levels of gastrin and histamine in the stomach further promote acid secretion, which in turn helps activate digestive enzymes like pepsinogen to pepsin. Pepsin breaks down peptides into their smallest constituents, amino acids. When the pH gets less than 1.5, the proton gradient across the antral G cells shuts down the release of gastrin. Inhibiting gastrin transiently decreases acid secretion to counterbalance the excessively low pH. In the duodenum and remaining small intestines, chemical detection mechanisms predominate. The acidic chyme helps activate both pancreatic enzymes and brush border enzymes. These enzymes break down starches into sugars, fats into fatty acids, and proteins into amino acids. These molecules can then act as a signal for receptors on the apical surface of enterocytes and the enteroendocrine cells. Protons are absorbed and secreted by enterocytes, but the changing gradient from acidic contents and fatty acids entering the duodenum starts the cascade of secretin functions. Similarly, as fatty acids and amino acids enter the duodenum, the CCK binding factor binds to I cells, beginning the cascade of CCK functions in the duodenum. Part 5. How does the body integrate gastrointestinal regulation mechanisms? Everything we have discussed so far seems quite linear, but the reality is that some cells are getting multiple stimuli from both hormonal and neural inputs. So how do they respond to simultaneous, potentially opposing stimuli? The answer is integration, and the main integrator of digestion is the enteric nervous system, the ENS. The ENS has been described as a second brain dedicated to the GI system because it can function autonomously from both parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems. This is because the ENS is formed of afferent neurons, interneurons, and efferent neurons, allowing it to form its own networks that detect and respond to GI stimuli. First, the afferent nerves detect mechanical and chemical signals along the GI tract. Then the two efferent layers, the submucosal and the myenteric plexi, promote various events along the GI tract to facilitate absorption. The first, the submucosal plexus, controls the secretion of enzymes. The second, the myenteric plexus, is between two layers of smooth muscle and controls peristalsis. Overall, the ENS releases a whole host of signal molecules with various effects that help coordinate digestion. Among these are acetylcholine, VIP, serotonin, and dopamine. The ENS does not always work alone, however. It can also be influenced by the PNS and SNS. Parasympathetic release of acetylcholine enhances digestion by increasing the secretion of stomach acid, increasing intestinal secretion of fluids, and prompting smooth muscle contraction proximal to the food bolus. Parasympathetic release of VIP increases intestinal fluid release and helps prompt smooth muscle relaxation distal to the food bolus. Sympathetic release of catecholamines actually inhibits the parasympathetic input, thus slowing digestion. For a quick clinical correlation, in cases of irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, defective serotonin signaling in the ENS is thought to cause excessive or absent secretion and motility. This results in the common periods of diarrhea or constipation. So finally, let's get to the cells capable of receiving multiple inputs. These are the G cells, the enterochromaffin-like cells, or ECL, and parietal cells. G cells receive neural and hormonal signals that can stimulate or inhibit the release of gastrin. The first of these is from postganglionic parasympathetic nerves, which innervate the G cells. The nerves directly release bombesin, or GRP, toward G cells to stimulate gastrin release. These PNS ganglia, along with the multiple luminal contents, can trigger the release of gastrin into the bloodstream or to nearby nerve plexuses. Another hormone directly affecting gastrin release is somatostatin. It inhibits gastrin release from G cells when the stomach pH is too low. ECL cells can also receive multiple stimuli, the first of which is actually gastrin from G cells. Gastrin promotes histamine release from ECL cells. In addition, postganglionic parasympathetic fibers release acetylcholine onto ECL cells, also stimulating histamine release. On the other hand, as expected, somatostatin from D cells inhibits histamine release. Both gastrin and histamine act on parietal cells, prompting the release of acid into the stomach lumen. Just like with the other two cell types, acetylcholine from postganglionic parasympathetic nerves also stimulates acid release. Together, these three signal molecules amplify acid secretion quickly, thus they are synergistic. Characteristically, somatostatin and prostaglandins inhibit the secretion of acid from parietal cells. All right, let's check in on what you just picked up here before we start the recap. Question: which hormones control the release of histamine from ECL cells? Answer is, ECL cells receive multiple stimuli. Histamine release from ECL cells is promoted by gastrin released from the G cells and acetylcholine released from postganglionic parasympathetic fibers and inhibited by somatostatin. And that's it for gastrointestinal regulatory substances. I know this was a heavy one, so thanks for sticking with it. Let's check your knowledge and see what we've learned today. First, can you name the four major regulating hormones in the GI tract? Regulation of secretions and hormones in the GI tract involves four major regulators: secretin, cholecystokinin or CCK, gastrin, and vasoactive intestinal polypeptide or VIP. Next, we will use just one of the hormones as an example, but you should be able to identify the cell type, release stimulus, and function of each of those four major hormones. So, for gastrin, can you identify the cell type, release stimulus, and function? Gastrin is released from G cells due to GI distension, high luminal peptide levels, and bombesin or GRP stimulation. Gastrin increases gastric motility, mucosal growth, and acid secretion. Okay, now here's a list to remember. Secondary hormones. Can you name the 8 secondary hormones contributing to GI regulation? Secondary hormones controlling GI regulation include bombesin, GLP-1, GLP-2, ghrelin, leptin, motilin, somatostatin, and GIP. Again, you should be able to describe the release stimulus and function of each of those 8 hormones, but let's do one important example. Can you describe the stimulus for release and the function of somatostatin? Somatostatin is released in response to low pH and high pepsinogen concentration in the GI lumen, and functions to slow or inhibit GI functions like insulin secretion and gallbladder contraction. And now, moving on to the importance of how the GI cells integrate multiple inputs, answer this question. How does the GI tract sense chemical components in the lumen? Chemical sensing involves G protein-coupled receptors that respond to glucose, fatty acids, and amino acids. They stimulate releasing peptides, which prompt hormone release. And as an example of integration, how do G cells integrate multiple hormonal and neural regulatory inputs? G cells receive parasympathetic stimulatory inputs via bombesin, or GRP, and luminal stimulatory inputs from high pH and amino acids and mechanical stretch. Somatostatin inhibits the G cells. Whew, and we're done with GI regulatory substances. Many thanks again for getting to this point. And now, armed with your newfound knowledge, let's revisit your patient from earlier in this episode. Thinking back to Jamal and Toby, your father-son pair who disagree about the appropriate speed of food consumption for a growing preteen, how can you address Jamal's concerns by explaining the complexities of digestion in the 3 minutes left in this office visit? First, you reassure Jamal that Toby is a very healthy child. From a health perspective, I wouldn't worry about Toby's speed of eating, you say. The body is set up with a very sensitive and well-orchestrated set of regulatory hormones that respond to mechanical and chemical signals as we eat. No matter how fast Toby swallows his food, the GI system moves food through the gut at an appropriate speed, using chemical messengers to break down the food, resulting in the absorption and digestion of fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. In fact, there is even a control mechanism designed to send us a message to stop eating. Toby beams with a triumphant, told-you-so look on his face. And that's our show. If you like this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time.